que vous allez avoir un superbe exposé d'un chercheur qui dirige un groupe de recherche au centre d'immunologie de Marseille Lumini, qui s'appelle Michael Siveke, qui est là-bas depuis 20 ans, qui est un des grands experts des macrophages, de leur différenciation, des processus donc justement d'auto-renouvellement, des précurseurs, quelles sont les molécules qui sont mises en jeu dans ces processus. Et il a un titre de séminaire qui est très joli. Redonne le titre. Ah ben je l'ai. Donc c'est en anglais, le titre, c'est The Macrophage and Cellular Harmony.
Je tiens à remercier Alain Fischer pour cette invitation au Collège de France, une institution si prestigieuse et d'une grande histoire. Et merci pour le mot gentil. Oui, je veux vous parler aujourd'hui des macrophages et leur auto-renouvellement et leur effet sur le tissu dans lequel ils habitent, disons, dans leur environnement tissulaire. Donc je suis, et c'est pour ça que j'ai appelé mon discours aujourd'hui le auto-renouvellement macrophagique et l'harmonie cellulaire. Donc, comme je suis arrivé de Marseille hier, je pensais que c'était approprié de commencer avec ce petit oursin que vous connaissez peut-être si vous passez vos vacances au sud. Et ce n'est pas juste délicieux, mais c'était aussi très utile pour la recherche scientifique parce que les larves petites, hein, qu'on voit sous le microscope, sont transparents. Et c'est qu'est-ce qu'on voit ici. Donc on peut regarder les dents, on peut voir des cellules à l'intérieur. Et c'est qu'est-ce que fait un grand chercheur européen, je dirais. Il y a Metchnikov, qui naît en Ukraine, mais qui était aussi un grand chercheur, prix Nobel de l'Institut Pasteur. Il passait aussi ses jours au bord de la Méditerranée, il y a 140 années, à Messine, en Sicile. Il mettait un aiguille dans ses larves d'un oursin ou d'une étoile de mer. Et qu'est-ce qu'il voyait ? C'est indiqué sur l'image à droite. Cette insulte était attaquée par des cellules à l'intérieur de l'organisme. Et elle était très intéressée par cet effet-là. Elle a fait d'autres expériences. Elle a injecté de l'encre. Il a vu qu'il y a d'autres cellules comme ça dans l'intestin qui ont mangé le particule de l'encre. Donc, il a, basé sur cette observation-là, il a développé le concept de la phagocytose dont Alain nous a parlé il y a un moment. Et vu que c'était une période où on commençait à comprendre l'origine des maladies infectieuses, qu'il y a des bactéries qui sont à la base des graves maladies, et donc il pensait ça pourrait être un mécanisme de défense immunitaire. Et en fait, ce principe-là est à la base, à la fondation d'immunologie. Ça s'est développé dans une branche qu'on utilise toujours aujourd'hui de l'immunité innée, cellulaire, avec une spécificité moins grande que l'autre branche qui était aussi développée à l'époque, et je n'ai pas le temps de rentrer dans les détails. Donc, il y a Metchnikov, qui est toujours connu pour ses découvertes et ses concepts. Mais quand il a observé le macrophage dans les larves des organismes marins, il a aussi eu d'autres idées qui sont moins connues aujourd'hui, et je pense qu'ils sont aussi importants. D'où le titre de mon séminaire, parce que il a eu la vision qu'il y a un combat, une lutte darwinienne entre des cellules d'un tissu. Il était aussi un embryologiste qui a essayé de comprendre le développement des animaux, des embryons. Et c'était aussi une période où les idées de Darwin étaient tout récentes. Donc, il a essayé d'appliquer ça au développement d'organismes. Et il a pensé qu'il y a une compétition et il y aura besoin de quelque chose qui va contrôler ça, qui va donner l'harmonie à l'ensemble. Il a pensé que ça pourrait être le macrophage. Et si on voit l'image ici d'un de nos collègues, Philippe Hermomel, à l'Institut Pasteur, on voit que le macrophage qui bouge là, qui on tourne une autre cellule de tissu, on dirait c'est un massage peut-être, il s'occupe des cellules. Donc on pourrait dire que c'est les gardiens tissulaires. Et j'aimerais bien développer ce concept-là. C'est des macrophages surtout résidents, et elle a expliqué un peu la différence entre le recruté et le résident, et pourquoi ils sont importants dans le tissu, et pourquoi c'est aussi important dans l'inflammation, parce que c'est un peu l'opposé de l'inflammation si on garde le tissu, les cellules en bonne harmonie. C'est l'inverse d'une inflammation. Je vais revenir sur ça plus tard. Donc, je vais switcher en anglais maintenant parce que je crois que vous aurez un peu plus de précision. Donc, I wanted to point out that this concept of phagocytosis that I talked about in the beginning is not only important for clearing pathogens. That's how it was developed originally, but it's also important for clearing dead cells, and we already heard about the importance of this because it's important, for example, in the resolution of inflammation, but also in general tissue maintenance. Similar to that, macrophages will also clear tumor cells or cellular debris. But this goes beyond this concept because it will also be important in the normal tissue maintenance and the tissue integrity. And there's two examples where I will develop this. It's in the brain and in the bone. So as Alain already mentioned, in the brain there's not just neurons, microglia, the macrophages of the brain make up around 10%, so that's enormous. And they have a function there. It's not just a glue, they have an important function. They will phagocytose the synaptic connections. That's what's called synaptic pruning. And obviously, the synaptic connections, it's a connectivity between the neurons that is important for neuronal function in the end. So connecting or disconnecting synaptic contacts will, of course, have an important function. So it's one example of this caretaking of the tissue that macrophages have, especially resident macrophages, which are the microglia of the brain. But there are similar functions in other tissues. For example, in the lung, The lung contains a lot of mucus, which is continuously produced by epithelia. And macrophages in the lung will clear this surfactant. And if that doesn't happen, the lung would fill up with mucus. And there are diseases like that that are pretty terrible for the people afflicted by it when the macrophages cannot clear this surfactant. In the bone, we have a similar situation that bone is in a constant turnover. We imagine that we are stable in the way we are, especially bone. That's something very solid, but that's not at all the case. Bone is in constant turnover. It is recreated all the time, and it's degraded all the time. So, and this degradation is done by the macrophages of the bone, the osteoclast. So one could see these resident macrophages as caretakers of the tissue at the business end of the organ to clear, maintain integrity. So all these functions were still based on phagocytosis. But there are functions that go beyond that. And Alain alluded to that already to a certain extent, that there are many regulatory circuits in the tissue. This is a case in inflammation, but especially also the case in normal tissue homeostasis, in the normal tissue maintenance, to keep it stable. It's a dynamic stability. And macrophages are frequently at the center of that. Here's one example. Macrophages can sense the oxygen content of the tissue and as a result produce cytokines which will control endothelial cells, which then will alter permeability for oxygen and thus regulate the content. This is just one example. There are many of those, and there's many parameters that are both sensed and controlled by macrophages. So these are other growth factors that are exchanged with other cell types. There's the extracellular matrix. there are metabolic conditions of the tissues, what kind of nutrients are around, and what kind of metabolic process should be induced or repressed. There's hormone communication with the hormonal system, but also communication with the nervous system. And there is sensing and influence on a large array of physical conditions of the tissue. I already talked about oxygen content, but it's also osmolarity, tissue stiffness that could also be controlled by macrophages. Temperature, for example, as well, which will be sensed and then controlled by effects on for example, adipose tissue, or also systemically by release of hormones. So macrophages are in really a privileged position to fulfill this role of caretaker because they're present everywhere in the body. And if you zoom in with a microscope in the tissue, here's some examples. Macrophages are different colors, just the way the picture was taken in red, blue, or green. But you can see that in every tissue of the body, there is a network of macrophages all the time, the resident macrophages. So, and that is, of course, important if things go wrong. I mentioned a couple of parameters that are regulated by macrophages, and there's many conditions that are some of them related to inflammation, but not all of them, and some of them have been mentioned already in the previous talk. So what is the relation of this tissue caretaking, this homeostasis and inflammation? Homeostasis is the the desire, let's say, to maintain a stability. And this is what can be managed by the macrophages to a certain extent. They're not exclusive, but they have a very important role in bringing back the system into the center of balance. Inflammation will occur when there is a more dramatic insult that really is destroying large parts of the tissue that cannot be handled really by the normal homeostatic response. In the ideal situation, and that is what has been described today, inflammation will bring the organism, the organ, the cellular context back into balance, into harmony. If it goes wrong, it will not manage that and will induce pathology. Now, often this inflammation is doing the reversion to balance, to homeostasis, not exactly the same way as homeostatic control. That what you see when you cut yourself, you will still have a scar afterwards. So that is pretty good. You don't have a wound anymore, but you have a scar. That's a good example of a response that is, let's say, an emergency response. It's better than bleeding to death, obviously, but it's not exactly the same as before. And some of these inflammatory reactions are by design different from the homeostatic condition, that the normal tissue function has to be stopped to allow this inflammatory conditions. And some of these reactions are, let's say, collateral damage, that there's a compromise between the overall benefit for the organism and the damage that is done. It's a little bit like the fire brigade coming into your house, dousing the fire, but at the same time ruining completely the whole interior with water. So I think some of wound healing with strong fibrosis and a scar formation could be seen as an analogy to that. So a good example is, the heart, that if you have a heart attack and a large area becomes ischemic, then the typical reaction will be that it will close and close the wound, but there will be scarring. So there will not be a functional myocardial tissue, so the heart will be less performant. There are conditions where there can be full regeneration. For example, in the neonate, also in other organisms, in more primitive organisms, this is possible longer, but perhaps less known is that in the neonate, in the mouse, this is also possible, that if there is a wound inflicted, it can completely reconstitute the original condition of the tissue. So that is also an important example to oppose regeneration and wound healing, which is not necessarily the same. This is wound healing, this is regeneration. And macrophages are important in this process. If you remove macrophages, in the neonate, you will become a scarring response that resembles the adult. So here we come to the origin of macrophages that is important in all this, I believe, and that has been already briefly introduced. So the macrophages in the tissue can come from hematopoietic stem cells through intermediate steps of progenitors and then monocyte in the blood that infiltrate the tissue and give rise to macrophages. And they can come from embryonic progenitors, and we already heard in more detail about the different phases of this. There's different waves of hematopoiesis in the embryo and the yolk sac and different phases in the yolk sac even and in the fetal liver that produces macrophages that will reside in the tissue and develop with the organ where they have been lodging into adulthood. So this contribution of the two pathways to the resident macrophage pool depends on the tissue, and Alain has already mentioned that. There are some tissues that come exclusively from embryonic sources or even from very early embryonic sources like the yolk sac, for example, the macrophages of the brain, the microglia, and there's other tissues. this is also perhaps the case very early on in life, but rapidly they get replaced by monocytes. And there are tissues in between where this is mixed. Now, in inflammation, this balance is also changed, that whereas in the steady state, there's always also some monocytes infiltrating, and has been reported that they can also leave again, and they might be able, depending on the tissue, to contribute to the resident pool. But in inflammation, this becomes dramatically different because a lot of monocytes become recruited and also develop into macrophages. And these macrophages might actually be different, at least initially, than the embryo-derived ones. So it might be useful to stimulate this inflammatory response. And we have heard, obviously, if there is a big infection or a dramatic wound, then a rapid response is required. And this is occurring, for example, in an infection via cytokine signaling that can, in fact, change the whole production of blood cells, because one cytokine that we have worked on, it's called MCSF, that is important for the monocytic macrophage lineage, will stimulate, act directly already on the level of the hematopoietic stem cells to engage myelopoiesis that then in the end will give rise to monocytes as well. So the body can react to an emergency situation by changing the whole blood-forming system transiently to respond to that. So now I would like to come back to the very important population of resident macrophages that can, under certain conditions, be autonomous for a very long time. There's experiments have been done with labeling them in the adult and seeing how long their label is retained. So they can stay in a mouse system for many months. Given that the mouse lives 2 years, this is very long. So how are they maintained? Because they can be maintained also completely independent from monocyte input. And that's a question that we have worked on, because believe that if we understand how this works, we might have a handle on the mechanisms of inflammation and regeneration, and especially on the things that go wrong there. So how is this regulated? Extracellular factors called cytokines that are secreted by other cell types and that can induce cell division proliferation of these macrophages. There's, for example, IL-4 that will become released mainly by a certain type of infection that induces a very specific immune response, which occurs when there are parasites, for example, or worms in the body. The most common cytokine is MCSF, as I mentioned already, that is the defining cytokine for the lineage. And there's a factor that is similar to MCSF, IL-34, that will only will act on the same receptor, but will only occur in the skin and in the brain. And then there's another important cytokine that is also specific to certain tissue, to the lung, which is GM-CSF. So these are the factors that from extracellular factors that will stimulate macrophage proliferation. So what will they do intracellularly? There is signaling cascades that are engaged by them and that will then signal into the nucleus. This is a very limited cascade that I've drawn because this is only the ones that have been confirmed to be involved in proliferation. These cytokines also have other effects outside of regulating cell division, and there's more known about the cascades. It's also not up to date. There's a few more steps that have been drawn in the meantime. But I would like to come to the nuclear regulation, and particularly one set of transcription factors that we found is critical in regulating macrophage proliferation, in particular in response to the MCSF axis. So it's one of the transcription factors that is, at least in the blood system, in the hematopoietic system, specifically expressed in monocytes and macrophages. And we found that it plays an important role in control of macrophage proliferation. So if you look at the resident pool of macrophages, they are normally mainly quiescent. That means they don't divide. There's only a very small number of macrophages that do, about 1%, for example. But interestingly, we found that essentially all dividing macrophages, so this one is green, that's a marker of cell division, they will be negative for this transcription factors. And all the others that don't divide, they're positive. So a strict anticorrelation in resident macrophages shown in different tissues here. And when we inactivated this transcription factor plus another family member because it was redundant, then we found that now all of a sudden macrophages could go in large numbers into cycle and divide, which is not the case for the normal wild-type ones. And this was a puzzling observation because, in general, in differentiation, in tissue development, there's an anticorrelation between differentiation and cell division. So normally, the way tissues are renewed, and this is the case for many different tissue types, there is a strong amplification on progenitor cell level. And as these cells mature, they will withdraw from the cell cycle. And that's also the case. I mean, that's what many people do. You take bone marrow, you put that in culture to differentiate macrophages from them. And they will stop after a while when they're differentiated. So that is not the case when the MAFs are absent. This will be dissociated, and the mature cells can divide. Now, they not only could divide a few times, but they could divide many, many divisions. We've went up to 250 population doublings. So that's many months in culture. So, of course, you can never say that definitely, but they seem to be immortal, like a cell line. Now, that's very that was a very puzzling observation because it contradicted what had been believed. That had been believed for about 50 years. The 50 years before, it had not been believed. There was Alexis Carrel, who published over 100 years ago that he could cultivate chicken cells in culture indefinitely. Whether this is actually true is very questionable. I mean, it's argued now that maybe there were contaminations or maybe even purposeful manipulation of the cultures, so it's very difficult to say that. In addition, he fell into disgrace for his radical, horrible views on eugenics. But this is what had been believed for 50 years. It was cells in culture are immortal. So this view changed radically in the early 60s when Leonard Hayflick, he tried to culture primary cells in tissue culture and observed that there was a fixed number of times they could divide. And he called this the Hayflick limit. or other people called it the Hayflick limit. I don't think he himself called it like that. But meaning that cells in culture have a limited replicative lifespan, a limited number of times they can go through the cell cycle. Of course, there were the counterexample of tumor cell lines, for example, HeLa cells from the first tumor cell line that was established from the a patient, Henrietta Lacks, and that has been in continuous culture for 70 years almost, and this dispatched all around the world, and essentially an immortal cell line. But that's a tumor cell line. First, it's the karyotype is very abnormal, and it can induce tumors. But we tested the MAF-deficient macrophages. They were not tumorigenic. Here there's a comparison of another macrophage line after this example of HeLa cells. There were many, many different tumor cell lines that have been developed either by taking them directly from a tumor or by inducing them by viral or chemical agents. And there's an example here, a macrophage tumor, a macrophage line will make a tumor, and immunocompromised mice, these MAF-deficient macrophages will not do that. There's, of course, another example of immortal cells, if you want, that are not tumorigenic, and that those are ES cells. And that is a great finding that has been made in the early 80s by Martin Evans and Gail Martin, when they discovered that you can take cells from the inner cell mass of an early embryo of a blastocyst and put it into culture, and these cells can be amplified in culture for a long, long time indefinitely, and they can be re-injected into blastocyst, and that will contribute to a normal mouse development. So they're not tumor cells. They can integrate into the tissue and do their normal job. Now, it's a principle of these embryonic stem cells that they are what is called multi or pluripotent. That means they can give rise to different lineages of cell types. So blood, muscle, neurons, anything. They can make almost any cell of except the extra embryonic cells of the embryo. So we wondered, is there something in common between these two systems? And are we justified in actually calling it self-renewal? Immunology community, self-renewal is a term that is relatively loosely applied, and nobody has a problem with that. If you tell a stem cell biologist that the macrophages self-renew, they always get frantic, and they disagree with that. So I went back to the definition of what does self-renewal mean, because stem cell biologists think, of course, it's reserved to stem cells. It is a definition that of a specific kind of cell division where at least one of the daughter cells will have the same identity as a mother cell. And that's not necessarily the case when you have progenitors amplifying. You have a cell division. At the same time, the cell changes. So that is happening with these ES cells in culture. They stay ES cells, they stay stem cells, and they still can do their job. And it was also the case for our MAF-deficient macrophages. But these cells were completely differentiated, and these cells are pluripotent. But they shared the capacity of self-renewal, so we wondered whether there were shared genes. And in fact, we found an enrichment of an ES cell-specific signature in the proliferating self-renewing macrophages compared to the quiescent macrophages. Not for other adult stem cells, in fact. That's an interesting side observation. So we checked whether these genes were functionally important by using knockdown approaches with viruses. This was before CRISPR, so now we would do it with CRISPR. But it worked similarly well. When we did that, we observed that we lost the self-renewal capacity, so there are no colonies anymore, no proliferation. And so we looked at these genes that were shared with ES cells and were validated both in ES cells and in our macrophages. And we checked the effect of each factor on all the other factors that is shown here. You knock down one, you lose expression of this specific factor, but you also lose expression of others, particularly of MYC and the KLF family. And we constructed that into a network and observed that there is a cross-regulation of these self-renewal genes with two transcription factors that are important for cell cycle control, MYC and KLF2 at the center of this. Now, we were still very puzzled of how this was possible in two so completely different cell types. The one is a macrophage, the other one is an ES cells. How can that be? And how can they maintain the identity because the macrophage that didn't become ES cells? So we found that although the same genes were used, they were activated from different regulatory elements in the DNA called enhancers. Those are the ones that will have a positive effect on promoters on the transcription, so on the activation of these genes. So you have regulatory elements that control it in ES cells that are specific to ES cells, to ES cell identity, and you have regulatory elements that are only present in macrophages and that's specific to macrophages, and these will also control these self-renewal genes. And we found that they are directly repressed by MAFB. If you have MAFB, they will be shut off. No self-renewal genes, no proliferation. In its absence, they will be activated and you will get proliferation. So that's a scheme. I think I will skip that. It's maybe a bit, or it's just an example of here. You can see in pink the macrophage regulatory elements. This is an experiment. These peaks mean that there are factors binding to it. And they mean certain kind of activation, and this is on the regulatory elements of the ES cells. So what I told you about MAFB here as a scheme is shown here as a real experiment. You can see here in an example the MYC, a central gene that is regulated. Here you have MAFB binding to this important control element, and when MAFB is not present, there will be an activation mark. If you have MAFB again, you will lose the activation, two different activation marks. So that's shown here, and for all enhancers that are controlled, this is binding of MAFB that is shown here, and this is an activation mark that is absent, and if you don't have the MAFB, the activation mark will be present. So that this was important for the control of proliferation was shown by introducing the MAFB back into the cells that had lost it. And this was shutting down proliferation again, shown here in these colonies, or here was a certain marker of cell division. And we looked at that in single cells. We found that when we stimulated cells to go into cycle, macrophages of the peritoneum in this case, cells that didn't have the MAFB that were high for these self-renewal genes, and the ones that had it were low for these self-renewal genes. So it's also true in vivo, not just in the cell culture that I showed you. And that's just summarized here. I told you that MAFB is absent in the proliferating macrophages. Low MAFs confer extended self-renewal, and MAFB repressed self-renewal genes that are shared with ES cells. Now, we asked ourselves, well, is that just maybe something that got acquired by our genetic manipulation of removing this factor? And in the end, it's still kind of an artificial cell. So we looked across different macrophage populations and found that the lung macrophages, alveolar macrophages, are actually naturally very low in the MAFs. They express very low levels, shown here, compared to, for example, peritoneal macrophages. And what are these alveolar macrophages? They reside in the lung inside the alveoli. So this is an alveolus, this is the air, so they live sort of outside of the body if you want. So we wondered whether the low expression or near absence of the MAFs had the same effect on them, and indeed it did. We could also replate them and keep them in culture for extended periods of time. So that's a completely normal cell that's not genetically modified experimentally, but can also be expanded long time. Now, the interest of that, of course, in the long term, and that's what we are working on, is could this be used for macrophage cellular therapy and eventually? And that could be very important. There's, let's say, a renewal in interest in cellular therapies at the moment, but it's all focused on T cells mainly, because those can be easily grown in culture, which is not the case normally for macrophages. So I think we might have a handle here to develop such therapies. Now, one aspect that I would like to talk about, that this capacity of these cells to self-renew is not static, and it's different in the newborn animal compared to an old animal, and it declines with age, and that is what we have found in different organs in our lab, for example, shown here for the heart or the testes, but is also the case for many other tissues, and other people have seen that in other tissues. Now, this brings me to the question of how replicative capacity could be regulated over time. And over time, in one sense, in chronological age, that is in in years or months of the animal or the organism. The other aspect is replicative age. That means how many times a cell has divided. And that is also a concept that comes from stem cells that you can see here. So how many cells can a cell divide? And that is a question that has been studied very well in yeast. It's a simple eukaryote. And that you can do very quick genetics with. And a gene has been found, it's called SIR2, which controls replicative lifespan in budding yeast. So at normal levels, the yeast has a certain number of cycles it can go through. Under overexpression conditions, there are more cycles it can make with cell being in the same healthy status. And in the knockout, there's fewer divisions that are possible. Now, this SIR2 has homologs in mammals and or in nearly all animals. The most important analog is SIRT1, and it also affects replicative lifespan, aging, and stem cell activity. Both its substrate, it's an enzyme, it's a deacetylase, and the protein decline with age. And the activation of both either providing substrate or activating the enzyme will improve lifespan, will reduce aging symptoms in mammalian models, and will improve stem cell activity in different cell types. So we wondered whether that is important for macrophages. since also, particularly in ES cells, it has been shown it's important for stem cell activity, replicative lifespan, and other ES cells and aging symptoms. So we overexpressed the factor, and we found that it increased proliferation of macrophages, and we inhibited the factor either by knockdown approaches or by using chemical inhibitor of the enzymatic activity, and it prevents self-renewal. So, and this was also integrated with the self-renewal network that we identified previously. If we inhibit this enzyme, we also find first the central factors of the self-renewal network that are reduced, and then in a later stage, the peripheral ones. So there are age-dependent effects in macrophage self-renewal, and the lifespan regulator SIRT1 is important in that, and we're working on what else might be important on that. So why is that relevant, and why is that maybe relevant to inflammation as well? course, with the ability of the resident macrophages to self-maintain, to self-renew, they have to be replaced, and they're replaced by monocyte recruitment, or in the conditions of infection or other inflammatory episodes, there will be monocyte influx. And the question, and this, an example of this is, for example, here in the lung, which in principle can maintain the resident pool for a very long time once it has been seeded just before birth, and around birth some of it still. But if there are continuous infections, there's monocytes that infiltrate, can be viral infection, can be other infections, and a good part of the resident pool will be replaced by monocytes. So the question is whether these monocytes are really, monocyte-derived macrophages are really doing the same job of the previous ones. And there we, and I alluded already to trained immunity, that there can be epigenetic signatures that are maintained long time in the cells. And we have some own data now that suggests that stimulation of stem cells will change their epigenetics without necessarily changing their superficial phenotype or their superficial gene expression. So if those make macrophages, one could expect that they will be different to the ones that have been there before. And that is something that I think needs to be looked into in the future, and that we will do. So, yes, okay, that's, I think I won't explain that. This is what I just said. There's differences in gene expression in stem cells and epigenetic signature. This is genomic accessibility assays that show that there is an epigenetic memory that is maintained long term. So to conclude on this latter part, successive inflammatory episodes will lead to increased replacement of resident macrophages with monocyte-derived macrophages. And this altered macrophage pool might lead to changes that are important for tissue homeostasis and also for successive inflammatory response, which might be at the basis of something that's also called inflammaging, that there's more and more in inflammatory sensitivity and reactions with age. So I would like to finish and hope that I convinced you that macrophages have an important role to play in maintaining a tissue in good health, also in the steady state before an inflammation occurs, and maybe preventing that an inflammation occurs. And of course, under dramatic conditions, they will play a role in bringing the balance back. And I think the key thing is that we understand how, if this occurs, we can come back to the balanced situation rather than to the pathological situation, that we can come back to a state of harmony in the tissue. And I would like to finish with the observation that the way we see immunology is also shaped by the time we live in. And when the pioneers of immunology, for example, Ehrlich and Metchnikoff, but many other important figures in the field, lived and actually created the discipline of immunology, because it didn't exist before. It was a time when infection biology was very important, and it was discovered that bacteria could cause disease, and it was obvious that they mechanisms to fight these diseases, the immune system would be very relevant and very important. And things were seen through this perspective. But I would like to argue that the immune system is equally important of maintaining tissue in good health, and that the pathogen response is maybe just a minor part of it. And one should also keep in mind that when the discipline of immunology was created, it was not just the period when pathogens were discovered, but it was also a period of conflict, of war, of fierce competition economically, but also scientifically between France and Germany. And the discipline, I would like to argue, was shaped to a large extent in the competition between the large, the important players in at the Charité in Berlin and the Institut Pasteur in Paris. And when we look at that, and we look how we describe the immune system, there's our vocabulary is very aggressive and war-like, and it's, we sort of have overlooked that. And I would like to end and hope that in our time, we could start to see the immune system in a more harmonious way, and that. Hopefully that reflects our current situation. Thank you very much.